The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Tiernan Brady is with me. In the meantime, a Global Director of Inclusion at Clifford Chance and Director of the Australian Yes campaign, and Sentry involved as well in our own campaign, which is 10 years old, and we're going to be talking about it on this show and right across the station all this week. And I know some shows have already been doing that, not just this week, but Panty Bliss was on with Sean last week on this front. Tiernan, thanks a million for coming in to us.
No problem at all.
So before we talk about Australia, I'm interested in the comparison and the ripple effect and how one campaign impacted the other. But how do you reflect now on the passing of 10 years since our own vote, our own referendum?
I mean, I think most people look back on it really fondly because it was just such a fabulous moment of unity for the country. I think that if there was one gigantic takeaway, was the great thing that the campaign did was it wasn't about here's what one group of people want. It was about how do you have a big discussion, a referendum across the country that brings people together, that who is it we want to be today and who do we want to be tomorrow? And I think that's why it was such a pivotal moment, because it didn't feel like we were trying to beat the other side. It was who do we all collectively want to be. And it's very easy, you know, when you're looking back with 10 years now in a world that is so turbulent and so polarized, and take for granted that that kind of a positive, engaging campaign built on conversations and human stories is impossible. It's not impossible. We demonstrated it in 10 years, isn't that long ago, all the lack of virtues of social media and other media platforms and all that early polarization. You could really sense that back then. So you can run a different style campaign. And I think social change campaigns have to think like that, because, like I said, the great social change campaigns understand that most people who voted yes probably would have voted no 20 years earlier. Mm. And that journey in Ireland from criminalisation to being the first country in the world to pass marriage by a public vote, less than 20 years, which means it was the same people who lived in the country that criminalised us as gave us that full equal constitutional status. So building something where people can change their minds, where they can hear each other, where they're not in pitched camps against each other. I think that hopefully that becomes the legacy of this campaign, that it was not so much about what a minority group wanted as about what did Ireland want for itself and who did it want to be tomorrow.
And to what extent was that orchestrated, that the grassroots nature of the campaign, was it something that happened naturally? Did you and others sit down and think, this is the way we've got to do it? It's a door-to-door campaign.
It had to be, because it had to be about inclusion being a who, not a what. We knew this was going to be one in Birr and Bundoran and Ballybunion. And that was about how could you build a campaign with a tone that allowed people to feel they could tell their story, that they could talk to their relatives, that they could talk to their neighbours. If this had been a pitch battle, angry campaign that was about division and about one side beating the other, then all those people across the length and breadth of the island who had a story to tell, whether they were gay or not, whether they were the mother or father or friend or brother or work colleague of someone who was LGBT, you know, that we create that space for them to be able to have that conversation. And we knew so many countries had tried this. Public votes for any minority right just tend not to pass, because people get into their camps and campaigns can become divisive. So we knew if we went down that and ran a campaign, sitting down and explaining to Granny why she was a terrible person, or Granny, you're an awful old homophobe, or telling your neighbour why they were an awful old bigot, you know, it's just incorrect campaigning. You were building space for people to tell their stories so that they could go from one place to another and change their minds without rejecting themselves.
And in retrospect, now we look at that, and we did in the immediate aftermath as well, and we thought, God, wasn't this genius? And wasn't it also a lovely thing to have gone through as a country? You know what I mean? That people had that space. At the same time, was there a recognition at the start that, you know, this might be difficult for people, because what you're actually asking them to do is to knock on a stranger's door and to kind of say to them, can I have your permission to live the way I want to live?
I don't think
we really kind of talked about that after. It was all a kind of celebratory thing, and wasn't it these lovely conversations over a cup of tea? But I must have been traumatic on some level.
I think there's two things. One, of course it is. I think any conversation about your dignity, your status and your standing is hard. And people, you know, a 14-year-old who's coming to terms with who they are, or a 75-year-old who hasn't been out, and they turn on the radio and people are talking about their lives and have a permission to talk about their lives. So it's an endurance, and a really, for many people, it was really brutal, because now over a space of time, the problem with a referendum is this gigantic national discussion condensed into 8 to 10 weeks, so the harshness of that discussion, which could be stretched out over years in another type of campaign, suddenly is really condensed and amplified. So it is hard. But I think that reflects back on the point that all the more reason why the campaign had to build a campaign about conversation, a campaign that was about respectful engagement rather than angry debates, rather than challenging, trying to defeat another side. Because we knew one thing was absolutely true. No matter what happened, the result, everybody who was LGBT and everybody who wasn't was going to wake up in Ireland the following day. And we were going to have to share that space, whether we won or we lost. And with 63% or 62% of people voting yes, huge result. But 38% of people didn't. And that meant 38% of LGBT people walked down into a house that might have voted no. So the campaign didn't end. Your tone had to keep going. Your persuasion has to.
It's funny. That's the exact amount, the percentage of vote that Michael D. Higgins won the presidential election with. You know, but it's funny, just to the victor of the spoils. You know what I mean? He gets 38% of the vote. He's the president. Everyone rows in behind him, leader of the country or whatever, representative figurehead. You lose with 38% of the vote, and it's kind of, a lot of people kind of forget, we move on. Or those of us who are not in the LGBT community kind of move on. We forget, that's done and dusted now. Yeah. But, to what extent did we do that? Did we as a society kind of forget actually this kind of almost 40% of people there who voted no?
Totally. And it's the tendency of it. One of the reasons is we're victims of success. Every time we've made the country a bit more fairer for people, everyone has just moved on and the world got better. And because it had worked so well, we tend to stop paying attention to how it happened, to there was a long campaign, to, and in a way there's an inherent weakness in that. So whether it's decriminalisation, civil partnership, marriage, each one of those would be inconceivable if we didn't have them now. But because they've been so successful, we take them for granted. So there's a conversation has to keep going all the time. Mm. Like there's 40% of people, 38% of people who you still have to have that conversation with. Like I say, we know of the 62%, 63% that vote yes, maybe 20, 30% would have voted no if we'd asked them 10 years earlier. And so therefore, there is no finish line for a conversation about who we all collectively want to be together. It's a conversation that has to continue rolling all the time because there will be new LGBT people every year. We just keep popping up everywhere. It's one of our secrets.
And do you know what's interesting as well? I know this is just an obvious point to make in one sense, but those who have popped up in the last few years, I mean, people who are listening to this, if 17, 18, 19-year-olds listen to the radio, maybe it's on at their parents' house, it's kind of ancient history to them. You know, it's a thing that happened almost vaguely aware that happened. And
yes. Well, it's like your grandfather telling you, "Oh, I walked to school in my barefoot with a bag of coal," and you don't want to be that kind of campaigner.
Listen to your man going on about that thing that happened. But listen, you went then from here to Australia, to work on their campaign.
Yeah.
So how similar or how different was that?
So there's a lot of differences. Obviously, there are how we approached it in terms of trying to create that tone was very important. But obviously, Australia is the size of China. So unlike Ireland, where you could drive across the country and back again in the day and campaign in Galway, Bundoran and Dublin in one day, that's just not going to happen in Australia. Yeah. How do you build a campaign where there's no campaign bus coming, which meant building that tone where you wanted people in all these amazing Wagga Wagga, Wodonga, Toowoomba, these brilliant town names they have in Australia, they were going to have to tell their story. And so that became an even more important focus. But we learned a lot from the Irish campaign and the conversations about that. The other thing, I mean, Australia, it's got a tough political culture.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about that. For people who don't know or have never been or they never did the gap year, as it were, in Australia, how different is the political climate or culture?
Oh, it's a rough and tumble culture. Yeah. They really go at each other. Like, so in question time in the Australian Parliament is hammer and tongs. And so when you go, put it this way, Family Fortune, the game over here, in Australia it's called Family Feud. So everything's seen through that lens of a little bit more combative, a little bit more, we'll take you on. And so it was a big conversation to get people to realise this campaign isn't a political campaign. It's a social change campaign. It's about including people. So getting them to think not like that in terms of how we would roll out the campaign, not to get into how do we burn down the other side. Because the mission doesn't have the other side. The mission is to engage everyone, to allow everyone to see that this could be a journey they're for. There was a couple of other layers. I mean, there's so many more ethnicities and so many more religions, which meant there was a lot of layers you had to think about. And you know,
and a bigger evangelical presence as well among some communities. Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And a more contentious, and I say this with respect, a more contentious media, there was certainly a significantly larger part of the media that was positioned to be against it and was happy to do that. They really wanted to run very hard on it. I think we had a fairer, more balanced media here. I'm going to say that in here anyway.
Yes, of course.
But we had more balanced media, whereas we certainly had quite opinionated, strong campaign from within the media. So a lot of different dimensions. That said, getting to that approach of conversation, that it was going to be a conversation not about LGBT people, but a conversation about who Australia wanted to be.
Yeah.
Same as we did in Ireland. But the discipline in the world that we live in of trying to build that respectful tone, that's getting harder.
I want to talk about that, where we're going, where we are in a moment. But just when you're planning in Australia, you're conscious of the lessons we can learn from Ireland, so that grassroots movement, that organic thing, the really personal element of the campaign. How much are you thinking about what the other side are also learning? You know that great, know yourself, but know your enemy. And I know maybe enemy is the wrong way to think about it, but they're looking at Ireland too. They must be on some level, and they must be thinking, this is what we can't let happen. We can't let Tiernan and these guys turn it into calling around to the neighbour's house and talking to them and convincing them this is the way to do it.
Well, if I was going to be mean about them, I'm going to try and be respectfully mean about them. I think they looked at Ireland, but they also looked at America. And I think they went down the more American route of going, this is a hammer and tongs divisive campaign, and took some of the lessons from there. Okay. Where again, the no side had won in multiple states. California had voted no, the home of Hollywood. So they had gone to America, looked for those lessons. And I think the Australian people preferred the Irish approach, that campaign of conversation. So the more hammer and tongs they went down the negative road, the more it didn't sound like the Australia they wanted. I think it's a really interesting question. Always when you're having a referendum, you're campaigning for tomorrow. So what you sound like is actually a reflection of the tomorrow you're selling. And for change campaigns, we forget that sometimes, because most people are listening to this driving their car, sitting at home, and they're picking up bits of what we're saying. You know, they're hanging on every word you're saying, but they're picking up bits of what I'm saying.
Very kind of you, yeah.
But you know, therefore, what they're picking up is what's your tone like? What do I think Australia will feel like the day after this vote, or Ireland will feel like the day after this vote? And I think what the other side did was they went down that much more aggressive tone, and then that's picking up, well, that sounds like a divisive tomorrow.
Yeah.
Whereas we were trying to emphasize, no, this won't be. This is about letting more people in. And when you give people equal status and standing and dignity, everyone benefits. No one loses.
It's an emotional connection, a vibe thing, as the younger, as those 17, 18 and 19 year olds might say, if they pick up on this conversation. Yeah. I was listening to Buzz O'Neill talking about this on an Irish Times podcast today. He suggested if it was run today, he's not sure to get over the line. Just given the culture, maybe the emboldened nature of a louder minority. I wonder what you think.
I think you can always win these arguments. I think, you know, the challenges you face at the given point in time are always going to be different. There's no doubt polarization is bad for any conversation about minority rights. Because if we all just get into our camps and throw things at each other, then the minority has significantly less chance of winning. The other bit is campaigns now have to be really serious about, it's not enough to have the best argument. You have to create space where conversation can happen, because those are the things that have disappeared more. Polarization sucks out space where, even just in your own house, where your uncle could ask you a question, where the person you've worked with for 25 years could ask you a question. And people fear doing that because they just don't want to be in an argument, and they don't want to be in a divisive moment or be offensive. So campaigns, I think if you wanted to do it, I have full confidence in the Irish people, I have full confidence we win again. But I think it might be a different campaign with more focus on the need to create that positive, respectful space for everyone to ask a question, so that being confident in our own answers, so that people can have a conversation rather than have an angry debate. Because, like I say, I always think referendums are about all of us. So it's about who we will all be the day afterwards, not just who will we be in this heated 8 weeks where we're going to have a, you know, either a very angry discussion with each other or a conversation with each other.
Well, listen, lots of people have very fond memories of it. The recent referendum, someone else here is belying their age by calling them recent, really opened up conversations between generations. Families talked about things that would have been taboo for so many years. I think ultimately the country changed for the better and we all saw things from other perspectives. Yeah. And somebody else says, I think we should be so grateful for the people who told their stories and were so vulnerable 10 years ago. What they did is change things for a whole generation who grew up after them, after that referendum passed, and never doubted what their future held for them. So listen, thank you for the text, Tiernan. Thank you as well.
No problem at all. Pleasure.
I really appreciate it. Tiernan Brady.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.